Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanneke Oberhuber, and I'm your host. My guest today is Walter Driscoll. Hi.
Hello, how you doing? It just took me a second to hit the microphone there. Nice to meet you. Thank you for inviting me.
You are very welcome, and I'm so happy to have you here. And I love starting these conversations with a question where you can share a lot. And this question is, how did you come to see the world the way you do today? My understanding is that you have the language of a non-dual language, but I'm happy to hear it from your, in your own words. So, welcome.
Thank you. How did I come to see the world the way that I do today? It's an interesting question, because in one sense, I don't see it as a cause and effect situation where I see the world that I do today because of certain things, but I could tell the story, which ever since I can remember, I was a seeker since I was a young child. A longing, a sense that there was more to know. There was more to this than what meets the eye. And so I was interested in psychology and spirituality growing up, and also drugs and alcohol, psychedelics, and ended up in long-term adolescent treatment program through my addictions. So got really into Alcoholics Anonymous and learned a lot there, and really got into the Big Book, which I think there's a lot of similarities with the Big Book and the Course in Miracles. You know, in there it says our problems were of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic's an extreme example of self-will run riot. And it basically talks about this idea that we're powerless over alcohol. We can't manage our own lives, and we need to find a power greater than ourselves, because I wasn't doing a very good job running my own life. So I really started to look for this higher power, this, but then I was being pointed inward, that it was an inside job, that this wasn't some man in the clouds. I was being pointed. It was directed inward. I didn't know where that inward was. It was in here or where, but I just started to look and do this process, you know, of looking at myself, cleaning up my past, and self-inquiry. And they talk about resentment, fear, these things that drive us. Just like the Course, you know, my understanding is that the separation never happened. That this is all made up. This idea that I'm a separate, autonomous individual with free will and choice that's running my own life. But when I thought that I was running my own life, I was not doing a very good job at it. I was seeking through externals. I was thinking I was going to get better from the outside in through attention, positive reinforcement, sex, alcohol, drugs, attaboys, pats on the back. And that's the way until, you know, this shift kind of happened. you know, the miracle is this shift in perspective, that I don't see the world through this ego, as the Course would call it, in other places, the small sense of self, the dream, you know, they talk about waking up to the dream. And you just wake up and you see, wow, I've been making it all up the whole time. I'm the source of love. You know, the I am is the source of love, just beingness. There's nothing that I need to do. You know, somewhere in there says, I am already free. You know, I'm not a victim of the world I see. You know, I give everything all the meaning it has. It's powerful stuff to see that, you know, seek not to change the world, but seek to change my thoughts about the world. You know, projection makes perception. I'm projecting this evil, hateful world, and I'm a victim, and I've got to navigate through it and figure out how to come out on top. And it's not that way. You know, it's the same mind that is creating that can also create something very different. You know, just by saying there's no separation. You know, the tiny mad idea, you know, it never happened. That's the joke. That's the cosmic joke. The separation never happened. But the tiny mad idea is that, you know, somehow I'm apart from God, you know, and it's this crazy thing that I cast God out. He didn't cast me out. It was this bizarre, false sense of being separate from God that cast him out in my mind. It's a false belief. It's an illusion. So this seeking energy of being separate, of being apart from, and trying to find something, you know, there's that saying, what's looking is what you're looking for. And it's like closer than your breath. It's always already, you know, it's this conversation. It's the story I'm telling, which I forget where I was, but I think I was somewhere in AA. And then anyway, I moved on from that. Kind of because I was so young, I'd gotten involved at 18. I got sober at 18. I was sober through my 20s, into my 30s. And then I just decided I would try drinking, and so far, so good. So I parted ways, but I, you know, it hasn't left me, all that good stuff in that book. And I've embraced the Course of Miracles, as I said, and I am that Nisargadatta Maharaj. I had a sponsor who directed me towards non-duality, the Course, and I am that, and, teachers like that, Ramesh Balsekar. So I kind of went down a rabbit hole of non-duality. But also Neville Goddard, Seth, these other teachings as well. And I loved them all. Like Neville Goddard talks about how the imagination is God, and how, you know, and it's the same with the Course, that this imagination, this power of projection and thought to create our own world, our own reality. it's amazing to look at that. And this ego world of guilt, shame, and fear, it gets projected out, but it's coming from in here, you know? And that's why I said I'm the source of love. I'm also the source of guilt, if I want to be. Depends. I guess it's in the course, it's about making a decision with the Holy Spirit or something. I'm not an expert on the course either, but it was a part of my journey for sure. As you asked how it came to my worldview. It just kind of went like that, checking out different teachings. I did a lot of cafeteria style. You know, I didn't just like do the lessons and do the course and be a Course in Miracles student necessarily, but I kind of bounced around from thing to thing and checked out this and that. And one day, just seemingly out of nowhere in a cafe, had this spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. Depends what you want to call it. Some people call it enlightenment, a falling away of a me, a sense of self. That sense of separation that I was trying to, that, you know, that hole in my soul, as you've heard, that I was trying to fill with all that stuff. Even the spirituality. You know, they say, use a thorn to remove another thorn. So some of these tools I was using, you know, take your pick, the things I mentioned I was bouncing around from, were used to remove a thorn, and then you throw both thorns away in the end, it seems. Because in the end, it seemed like I couldn't hang my hat on anything or be attached to, you know, there was no, that's why they say it's a free fall. There was no one here to, it was just always already perfect, whole and complete. Nobody was, you know, the separation never happened. That's what was seen in the coffee shop, was that this appearance was the same as the walls and all the other bodies. And inside, there was no ghost in the machine. There was no separate individual with autonomy inside the skull. It was all just one big, beautiful outpouring, one appearance from no thing. And there was no difference between this and the chair and the moon and the trees and there was just nobody doing anything, but things seemed to be being done, but there was no individual doer, but there are still actions happening and people going to work, and I was going to work, and that sense of personal authorship was seen through, I guess, is one way of saying it. And all those teachings I had been looking at just finally made sense. You know, it was like, they say you can starve to death reading a cookbook. You know, it's like I felt like I finally got to taste something off the menu, and I was like, wow, I know what the hell they're talking about now when they say something spicy. I know what spicy is, you know. you know, it's like you could describe an orange, but if you taste an orange, it's a big difference from the head to the heart, or an intellectual understanding. I wouldn't even call it an experiential understanding, because, you know, there really was no one here experiencing anything. It just was this one happening, you know, with nothing behind it, no source, no duality, really, which is, like you said, is kind of where where I'm coming from when I speak, because, well, like I said, what I had been reading and learning about non-duality was just finally seen and realized, but it was beyond the words. You know, as they say, the map isn't the territory, and you can't get wet from the word water. And there really is no describing what already is, because there are no things. There is no separation. And I've heard thoughts are things, but a thought is no thing, just arising from no thing. So there are no things. Things are just words, imagination, concepts, beliefs, projections. Anyway, I hope that answers your first question. Thank you.
Well, it's important to go into that, and we've got a more of a feel for the way you see the world, because you come from you're not experiencing yourself as a somebody, but as being, right? As including everything. Like, that's going on, and that's an important perspective to get to know. And I think it's really great to say you got a taste of what the books are speaking about, right? And it's informing what's going on. Maybe you'd like to go a little bit deeper into what it means to be having that taste and still, I mean, you're encountering these things going on that think they are somebody or something or whatever, like me, right? And how that is for someone who has that, you know, no separation. So I guess you don't feel separate from me. So what is that like?
Well, it's hard to say what it's like, because it's not like an experience that I'm having that I'm not separate from you. It's not like I'm experiencing my own absence. it's just seen, or I don't know how to say it, but that whatever's happening is this one beautiful outpouring. You could say it's what's apparently happening. It seems to be happening. Like the separation seems to be happening. You often hear the example of Santa Claus. You once you realize Santa Claus isn't real, you know, you never believe Santa Claus is not somebody dressed in a costume. It's just... But it's different than that, because it's not like a belief. It's not like a new philosophy or a new understanding. It's just the way that it seems to be, that you and I are not separate. We're both arising from the same no thing, and it's being expressed there. It's being expressed here. Just as the body is one thing, but I have a thumb and I have, you know, toes, and I have different limbs doing different things that aren't feeling the same pain or doing the same things, but it's a part of the same expression. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. There's no one here doubting that or questioning that or even affirming that. It just seems to be the way it is. That there's nothing behind any of it. But I see even science, you know, something that seems to be way over there is communicating or reacting and responding with something way over there. And there's this connection, you know? I mean, it's an unbroken whole. So, yeah, it's just, it's not a belief or you know, I heard, I think it's a guy named Wayne Lickerman, he says, he has a few books and a popular speaker. He says, it's like describing what it's not to like, what it's like not to have a rock in your shoe. Like if you're walking around a long time, you got a pebble in your shoe and then it gets removed. And it's like someone's asking you, what is it like not to have a pebble in your shoe? It's really an absence of something. Some call it a contracted energy or you know, a thought, a belief. It's tough to describe. But it certainly was something that needed defending, that needed propping up, that needed reinforcement, that needed all kinds of things. The me, you know, this false me, this false sense of self, false sense of separation, false sense of authorship. It's a bottomless pit because it doesn't exist. And there's no way to satisfy this phantom, you know, this thing that doesn't exist. It's insatiable. And the only way to satisfy it is by seeing it never was to begin with, it seems. So, anyway.
Yeah, I think it's really important, you know, I believe that many of us have had glimpses, right? But this actual abiding in this way of being, right? In this experience where it can be explained as you were, right? Explaining it is a different story than having a glimpse of it. So, did you have glimpses before this became something that is a everyday experience where you no longer have to think about it? It just is the way it is.
Well, I didn't have any glimpses, but well, maybe I did. They were different than I guess the shift that I'm describing now. But I had a oneness experience that I think was profound, but I felt like I had the oneness experience. So I was claiming the experience. And that's one thing about the shift, I guess, is that it's not about ownership. There's no one to own anything. There's no one to claim anything. You know, where would I get a sense of me, or how would I, who's the I that would drop the sense of me? You know, there's just no, so the fact that I would take responsibility for something falling away or some kind of attainment, you know, there's nothing to attain because there's no one separate to attain anything. It just always already is whole, complete, and perfect. But I thought I had a oneness experience, which is I was out on the street, and I remember after the fact reading about Thomas Merton, who was a famous Trappist monk. He talked about an experience he had. And mine was very similar, where I could just almost see in everyone's minds that they were thinking the same things, you know. It says in the course something about minds are joined, bodies are separate, you know. And so it's like, yeah, this sort of one universal mind I sort of tapped into and just saw that we all have these same fears, doubts, and insecurities. And we're all sort of being motivated by the same things and have the same things driving us. I just saw through these, the personality, you know, in a way that what was driving human behavior was all these commonalities. It just blew me away, and it just felt like there was no separation. And just this unicity and oneness, it was pretty moving. But again, I did feel like I had that. And it was kind of also, it stayed with me, but the experience itself was kind of fleeting. So it was like a flash in a moment that was, but I hung on to that because I feel like you don't lose what you get from those experiences, the insights. They kind of, you know, you might go into this realm, but you come back with something, bring it back with you. And, you know, anything that speaks of non-separation and oneness and connection to me is all right, you know. Anyway, that's that.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point, is that these experiences of oneness, no matter whether you're still experiencing yourself as the one experiencing it or claiming it or not, right, it's something that has a lasting effect. Okay. And so the idea that I'm trying to follow is when you had those glimpses, so to speak, as I called them, right? And it has a lasting effect, naturally, but it still had this experience of being someone who could claim it. And I think that when you're in the midst of that experience, you can't claim it, right? But something comes up and wants to claim it, as long as you're still there. I certainly had that. I had an experience the experience in itself, once it had started, was without claiming it, but a moment later there was something there that wanted to claim it and say it's me or it's someone else working through me or whatever, right? Trying to explain it somehow. But I think I think that what you're saying would describe it best, right? There's no one to claim it. It simply is perfect as it is, right? There's no issue of whether it was me or someone else. It doesn't matter because it's an experience that includes all. There is no separation there. And I think that's something that it's all in A Course in Miracles. It uses these experiences or these ways of, it uses the language to guide you to be able to have that experience. And I think that you're describing it beautifully, how something just dropped away, right? Something that wasn't comfortable. It had, you needed a lot of effort to uphold it, right? And then when it was gone, you noticed that effort was gone too, right? And I think that's something that's so important to us. We don't like this experience of efforting, but we still uphold it as long as we do, right? Until it falls away, right? As it did for you. And then I suspect that it continues to develop in itself as well. It's always, you know, in A Course in Miracles, it always says that it's always fresh, right? So it's not like it's boring because there's no one doing anything, right? No, nothing that claims doing anything, right? It still is, yeah, like you said, absolutely marvelous, perfect. And wonderful, right? And so I I mean, I've heard a lot of people saying it deepens and deepens and continues to overflow in more and more ways, right? Even though you cannot claim that you're the one bringing it to making it overflow, right? You're not experiencing it that way, and it's not the way it is for you. And I suspect for anyone having that, coming to that point, it isn't that way for you, for them either, right? And I thought the point of the one mind, I think that's a beautiful point. In the Course in Miracles, it says we're all thinking with the same mind. There is no different mind. But you may think of it in unity with the Holy Spirit, or claim to be separate by listening to what thinks we're separate, right? Which is, in A Course in Miracles, it's called the ego, right? But it doesn't, these words are just words to describe the shift, right? The different person, it's a totally different way of being, basically.
Yeah. And one thing you see is nothing is, but thinking makes it so. Thinking, so just experiences are, I think the deepening is what I wanted to speak to, is what you're getting at. And I think this nothing is, apart from mind, nothing is apart from what, you know, it's like what I said about seek not to change the world, but what you believe about the world, or however that quote goes. It's, you know, the world is nothing. You know, all the qualities and all the attributes and all the, whether it's evil or loving, or all this is coming from mind. So I think this is where the deepening is what kind of a world do I see? You know? And where is that coming from? And I'd say that's where it's brought me, you know, to kind of look at that. And it doesn't matter, you know, it's not like I'm super radical non-duality where I'm just saying there's no one here to do that. Like, that's been seen as well, but there's no one here to tie my shoes or take a shower or brush my teeth or do anything. It's just all just happening. And now what's happening is I'm looking at sort of this idea of the creation of my world and how that takes place, and the thinking that goes into that. And not necessarily manifestation and things like that, but more just it's that there's a quote, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And I think it's kind of like that. You know, the more and more I could look at things differently and just experiment with that and see how that my world of experience responds to that, and see how that works. Because what else is there? What else is there to do, you know? Just having fun. You know, I learned in the course, the world is my classroom, you know? The world is a classroom. And so we're here to learn some lessons, perhaps. And I think that's one of them. You know, how can I create the best experience for myself and others while this body, this meat suit is here in this appearance? You know, I think those are interesting things to think about. As far as a deepening, I think there's more to be revealed. I certainly, I hope I haven't got it all figured out. That would be sad and boring.
Yeah, and you expressed a lot about having allowed various teachings into your life. Now they all brought you to this open-minded space where you are now. Speak about different things. You can use non-dual language. You can use the non-dual language of A Course in Miracles. That sounds somewhat different, right? But it still is a non-dual language, according to my understanding of it, and others, many others. And then there's even, I think there's dual languages that actually we are appealing to the non-dual as well. So, you know, and as you said, what I thought was significant, you said, you know, you saw how all that you've been viewing as separate from you is actually thinking the same way as you are. And there's no separation in truth. I think that's very significant, because to experience yourself as not separate, but as actually joined, you know, it's one thought going on. That's what the experience I was speaking of previously, you know, everything was singing the same song. Right? It was one song, one melody, one harmonics, one lyrics, right? It was all one. There was no separateness in that, right? It was all one. All was wonderful and beautiful and glorious. And I think that's significant, that is a way of understanding, you know, of interpreting everything that is legitimate. You know, people who have separation thinking, you might think, you know, well, how can you think that way, right? That can't be true, right? That doesn't make sense. I have my own. I need to get this. You don't, right? Yeah, you like pizza. I don't, right? That makes us separate. But the way you were describing it, that's not what you're speaking of, right? This doesn't make any sense to a non-dualistic point of view where everything is joined. And I think one of the funny quotes from A Course in Miracles about this is that we all can agree that we want to be perfectly happy. I don't know what you want to say about that.
We all agree we want to be perfectly happy. Yes, so absolutely. I'm trying to think, it's been a while with me with the course, but either running towards love or away, what is it? Away from fear and towards love or something like that, right? Or away from love or towards love, you know, it's something like that. But that's the way I think. I mean, there's really no movement, but there's just this mind movement of moving away from love or towards love, but it's all love, you know, that especially in non-duality, they talk a lot about unconditional love. And it's funny because unconditional love can appear as anything, including hate, including, you know, anger, war. It just means that anything is allowed to appear in this dream. Anything is allowed to show up. But, you know, when we say like it never happened, it's like perfect oneness. You know, never left perfect oneness. But we have this dream of separation where everything is allowed to appear in the dream. Because the dreamer is unconditional love. You know, or I use the example of the potter working at his wheel, creating, you know, all these pots and objects and out of clay. And the potter is imagination, you know, and the clay is thought, you know, and he's just spinning all these tales and stories and beautiful imagery. You know, life is a tapestry of color and sound and fury and signifying nothing, you know. It's, you know, like the Course, like I said earlier, give it all the meaning. We give everything all the meaning it has. It's like there's no meaning or purpose. There's no how, why. We're trying to, you know, there's no source for anything. There's no reason for anything. This is just what's happening. And then, you know, I can't step out of this. I'm not a, what I wanted to say to you earlier is, yeah, it's like the separation is like we think there's everything plus us. You know, there's the universe, and then there's also me. And I got to figure a way to connect to this thing that's happening that some people seem to have figured out. And yeah, projection with like gurus and teachers or whoever that you think, you know, they have it figured out and I don't, and I have to get what they have. But nobody has anything. You know, this is it. It's the seeking. It's the apparent finding. It's every step in between. It's already the case. This is, you know, life being lived apparently. And, you know, I've heard it said you're being lived. You're being expressed. It's beautiful. But I think, like, it's beautiful, the Course in Miracles story and the channeling and stuff. But I do see that everybody is being channeled in a way, if you want to put it that way. Nobody's, you know, there are no original thoughts. It's all coming from somewhere, this one apparent source, you know, even though I say there's no source, but if there's going to be a source, it's not going to be separate sources, for one for this person and one for this person. It's all being expressed from the same, I'll say, no thing. I like no thing because I couldn't possibly ever define it or understand it. I think you'd have to be God to understand God, or, you know, put any kind of label on it. Just seems to be all there is everywhere all at once. And from the ordinary to the extraordinary to the awful to the beautiful. I mean, it's all there is. There's this one beautiful, miraculous, loving beingness expression. So, yeah, if there's a thinking that, because I think with the oneness experience, that's what it felt like too. It was like, it was still this, you know, universal mind. Like, there was an understanding, there was even an experiential understanding, but still there was a plus one, you know. It wasn't whole and complete, it was whole and complete, and then there was something separate. That needed to figure out how to, you know, it's the same with the illusion of the ego or the self, that I need to drop a self, or get rid of a self. You know, there's a higher self and a lower, there's a big S, there's a small S. I mean, the Course in Miracles is allegory. It's a pointer. You know, it's ultimately these perennial wisdom teachings deconstruct themselves in the end and say, even this isn't the truth. Even this is a story, you know, but you need the story to realize it's all a story. You know, you need the thorn to realize, you know, you can throw them all away. And It's kind of like you need to read all the books until you don't have to read those books anymore. But I don't know. I was talking earlier with somebody about, maybe you could tell me your thoughts on this, but whether it's a process, it seems to be a process, but in the end you realize there was no process because it was already this perfect, oneness. We were never separate to begin with, but we had to seemingly go through a process to see we didn't need the process. So it's a kind of paradoxical.
Well, I guess that's why it says the world will end in laughter. I think that says everything, the paradox. it disappears because you're laughing at it, so no longer a paradox for you because it doesn't matter, right? Because it's no longer, you're no longer attached to the paradox, to the idea that this could contradict something else. Like you were saying, all these things that are going on, and of course uses the word dream as well, right? It's a dream. And you awake from the dream, right? Dream ends in laughter, let's put it that way, right? The world ends in laughter because the world is a dream. Right? So the world ends in laughter. And the only reason that you experience something that could be a world is because you forgot to laugh, according to A Course in Miracles. So, and the question about a process, well, like you said, it says, there is no process, it's not really a process, but it is you forget what isn't true so that you can remember what is true, right? That it's there, it has been there all the time. So the Course says, you're remembering who you are is also included in that remembering is a forgetting, because you need to forget what isn't true, right? So it's a little, that in itself it's a paradoxical explanation for what's going on, right? Like the Holy Spirit, you ask it to remove the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, because A Course in Miracles says we can't teach love because that's who you are, right? So it's basically, like you said, in the end it says, forget about this course, forget about it all, and come to God as you are, come as you are, be who you are, right? You could say, you don't even have to come to God, come to what is, right? Or whatever you want to call it, and it also says the closest to the infinity or to the whole experience is the present. Now, we know that we're, through our perception and everything, we're never in the present. Even physiologically, until our mind has made up a story for what comes in through the body, supposedly, right? It's already in the past. So I can understand that there's no one there. When you're in the present, there can't be anyone there, because otherwise it would still be the experience of the past that you're having. So the present, there can't be anyone there. It can't be that way. There can't be anything there, because you would be in the past if there is. Because that entails an interpretation of thought. So I guess that's the closest you can get to who you are, as long as you're experiencing the dream, is that there's nobody there, right? And it's a glorious experience. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's glorious, but it's everything, you know? It's all of it. I'd say it was certainly mind-blowing. You know, it's like I don't have a mind, really. If a mind is kind of like a backpack of concepts, or a mind is a storage of beliefs, and it's a complete unknowing, because I can't say that I know what God is, whether there is a God, or there is a source, or I don't, there's just no knowing. There's just being. There's just this current expression in these words and these thoughts, whatever's arising in the immediacy. So again, it's like not like an attainment or some advanced understanding. I, you know, it took away the seeking, because the seeking was thinking that I was going to arrive. I was going to walk around in bliss and some, like that oneness experience. I was going to walk around having that one experience 24/7. But it's just life happening for no one. But it's beautiful, because you see that even the sadness and the heartbreak is still it. I don't, you know, and people may disagree with me, but I don't think that the goal is to be problem free, or to be free of bad emotions. It, you know, it's just, there's no one here to fight those emotions or to rise above them. That's all there is just what's coming through this body. You know, it's all allowed. It's all allowed. But it's not like there's someone here allowing it. There's not a gatekeeper of emotions saying, you're okay, you're not okay. And, you know, when I try to apply, like positive thinking, for example, it's a lot of work. And it was like policing my thoughts. And I realized that, you know, almost like that resistant, the more you resist, it persists. That which you resist persists. So it's like I felt like the more I was working on certain things, the more I needed to work at certain things. Almost. So this seems very natural, spontaneous, just organic. It's just life is being lived. This is what's happening. There's no separation. There's no, you can't mess it up. You can't mess this up. And I think it can be beautifully healing to hear that. That, you know, in a world where it's all about New Year's resolutions and constantly giving up things and having a checklist. And I think you were saying a list of things that I needed to accomplish. And or maybe that was somebody, I just had another conversation. So, but like a list of things I needed to check off for me to be okay. For me to get to where I thought I needed to be. But just to knowing that it's already, you know, it's not separate. It's already perfect. It's already God. Or if you like, you know, whatever works. Some people resonate with Jesus Christ, or I think you say Jeshua, or you know, if there's only oneness, then it doesn't matter what the label is, in my opinion, because it's the label's not the thing, as I say. Some people say energy. You could think of it as a countertop with a blender and a toaster and a microwave. They all different appearances. They all seem to be doing different things, but they all plug into that same power source. And it's the same energy animating and giving life to all these different separate objects. It's the same life force, if you will. So that's what's magnificent. It's more of the awe and wonder. Rumi said, sell your cleverness and purchase bewilderment. So it's not about learning and quoting and understanding these dense, complex systems. You know, and science is beautiful, and I'm interested in that, but you know, I don't think I'm ever going to figure something out, in other words, that's going to get me to the next level. Because like we said earlier, maybe you go through levels to see there are no levels, or you go through a process to see there are no processes. And it was always this way.
That's an important point to recognize, that, yeah, like you said, it's all is okay. I was singing a song that came to me when my kids were very young. All is fine, all is okay. And I think that's the truth, even when we don't want to hear it, right? To be really angry is fine and okay too, right? To be unhappy and so on. It's all allowed. And I think that's this all allowingness, meaning that all is okay the way it is certainly a lot closer to being present in the present moment than the one where we're always trying to tell it to stop, or tell it to do this, or tell oneself to do that, right? Like you were saying, you know, this positive thinking or negative thinking, whatever you're using, right? To change the experience, right? Saying, yeah, this, you know, this person is too nice to be real, right? This thing can't happen, you know. We're always, you know, this constant wanting to change the experience. And it doesn't matter in which direction the ego would use, might be described as the one using the negative, but we don't know that. We don't know what the ego is meant, right, in truth. You know, this, we don't understand separation thinking either, you know. It's not like I understand what it means to think that I'm separate. Right? Otherwise, I'd probably give it up immediately. It doesn't, in truth, it doesn't make sense according to the Course in Miracles and to other teachings and to experience people who are experiencing it. You know, it doesn't, like you, right? It doesn't make sense. So it doesn't attach to you anymore. You know, you experience it, go through it just like anyone else, but you're no longer interpreting it in the same way. It's a totally different interpretation. Because you are, yeah, like you said, your interpretation is always fine. It's fine. It can, everything is allowed to be where it is now. It's perfect that way. And it never needed to be changed in the first place. So all this effort in trying to change it can be dropped.
Just like the Wizard of Oz. You know, the wizard didn't give the Tin Man anything he didn't already have. And that was the message. You know, he had it all along. You've been home the whole time. And it's the most beautiful message, you know, that I've ever heard. Because everything seems to be about getting somewhere and attaining something and self-realization or self-actualization or self-help. And then when you see there is no self, you know, it's kind of all kind of funny. And all those things were beautiful. And I'm certainly not, you know, I was a big fan of a lot of people that would be considered self-help or even motivational stuff. I really appreciated that. And I think it had its place along the way. But I mean, the ultimate message is it's already perfect, whole, and complete. And if you're not where you want to be in your career or with your weight or with whatever the circumstances are, even while you're working on yourself or you're striving or you're feeling guilty, or it's still whole, perfect, and complete. Every step of the apparent journey is already perfect. And I don't know, like, it's so amazing because there's no way to get from nowhere to here. We're already here, but, you know, you see these things we have to do and problems we face and dilemmas, they just kind of arise out of the same place. And then we come up with solutions and those kind of arise out of the same place. And we kind of have the answers and we have the questions, you know, and they're all kind of arising from the same apparent source. And it's just kind of funny. It seems like going in the circle sometimes, but you can almost have a perspective and laugh about it. In other words, you laugh more. You know, I think that the Course in Miracles says your forehead is serene. You know, there is something to that, because being like in the world but not of the world, you know, still will face the decline of the body and relationships and all the normal stuff, but you just see, wow, it's a dream. And it's a beautiful dream. And it's amazing that there is even a dream happening. There seemed to be happening, or that it seems privileged to be a part of this play, this movie, this, you know, classroom that we called. But yeah, it's beautiful. What can I say?
Yeah, dreamer, all these expressions that we use. And it's all just to point to something. And I like the way A Course in Miracles speaks about it. It's not about the form, but about the message. Or it's not about the experience that you're having now, or what you think it is going on, but it's about what is actually going on. It's something that you cannot even use in. Yeah, what's going on is not just even able to describe what actually is. because it's way beyond that, because this isn't the truth of the matter. That's why it's an illusion, right? It's not the truth, because it's not what's actually going on. So this, yeah, the truth never changes or is always the same, and yet it's always delicious or horrible or whatever your experience it might, your interpretation of it is, but it's not the truth of it, right? So it's not really horrible and it's not really delicious at this moment, right? It simply is who you are. And to describe that, you know, all these interpretations and things that we're doing, you know, are only, yeah, basically distortions of what's actually true because of the way we're describing it. Yeah, I don't know. It's just some thoughts on it. It's a pretty awesome thing to think about. And I think it's important that we're talking about it.
Yeah, it's just in that way you can see that it's made up, you know, mind is making it up, because nothing, like I think Donald Hoffman is talking about it being like a dashboard, like your desktop, and the icons on the desktop, you know, that obviously it's just a representation of something that we can't see, you know, we don't, and nothing is as it seems. And it's a great analogy, because we can only see, so, you know, what's being seen through these human eyes, through this human experience, through this filtration of vision and mind and concepts and beliefs. But who knows, you know, it's like 7 billion worlds out there, you know, but there is no, see, there's no independent existence. There's no objective reality. So we have all these different interpretations. And there's no, like, there's no Walter, for example. If 1,000 people have met me, then there's 1,000 different versions of Walter, including my own version. And none of them are right or true. It's just what appears to be. It's just a mind-made interpretation of who and what Walter is. And even this doesn't know. So that's it's an interesting thing to think about. You know, like a relationship always has all these different characters in it. It's not just two people. You know, it's what I think about me, what she thinks about me, what I think about her, what she thinks about her, and then, you know, and then it's just crazy. And none of them are accurate, because there is no such thing. There's no solidity to this. There's no solid, real, actual thing we can point to and say that's what Walter is. There's no driver of the dream bus. I don't think there's a dreamer of the dream. I just think all there is dream. Just dream stuff. But I don't know. Just.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. I mean, the And of course, in miracles, it likes to explain it through steps, right? It has, we're dreaming this dream of separation. We're unhappy, the unhappy dream, so to speak. Then there's shifts that happen and you open up for more of a deeper way of being, I guess. Then it comes to the real world. And it's a happy dream, right? It still is a dream. It's a happy dream, right? And then beyond that is what, if you use Christian language, you'd say heaven, right? And that's something that arises from there, but it's not you doing it. It's, you know, something beyond you. You say God, right? That last step is done by God, right? By that which we cannot explain, right? That it goes beyond all words and all descriptions. And then you are there, and then it's over, right? This dream is over then. And our attempts to describe that, right, are, you know, they're manifold. So yes, according to A Course in Miracles, there is a reality, an objective one, right? But not one that we could describe, right? All our descriptions will never get there, right? Because it's all a dream, right? All these descriptions are dream descriptions. So it's just, you know, but yes, the closest to that is the happy dream, right? It within the dream experience. But that doesn't mean that I, you know, the description that heaven is a happiness, it falls way short. It just doesn't describe it, obviously, right? Because that's still part of the dream. As long as I'm able to say I'm happy and it's all is wonderful, and I'm still dreaming, I guess. At least that's the way I see it.
Yes, dream the happy dream. Or, you know, I've heard it, rearranging the furniture in your prison, switching seats on the Titanic. but the thing is, it is a dream. And why not have a happier dream? This is what I was saying about realizing and experimenting with the creation of the dream. And yeah, why not focus on that too? How to have a happier dream. This is why I encourage and support and honor and respect all modalities such as therapy and Course in Miracles and non-duality, be it radical or otherwise. And there's a lot of beautiful teachings and methods and practices and meditations and mindfulness and being present and things like that. Because if they can bring about a happier dream, relieve stress and anxiety and bring a little more peace to the day, I totally support that. Because I don't think non-duality is more descriptive rather than prescriptive. It's just saying it's already whole, complete, perfect. There's no separation. And but it's not saying, here's what you should do. So you can see that, so you can realize that, so you can experience that. But so it's just kind of stating the obvious that we never left heaven, you know? But at the same time, it's not a negation, you know, that this dream is happening. I'm in the dream. And I'm doing the same thing. I'm trying to have a happier dream. I'm doing things to improve my so-called life. I think that's they talk in the course about level confusion. And I'm no expert, but I believe my understanding is it's like there's the relative and the absolute. The relative, you know, I got to go to work. I have relationships. I have two kids. I have this apparent life. And sometimes there's challenges and I got to talk through them with people. And then somebody will come. This is where the level confusion comes in. From this radical perspective and say, well, there's nobody there to have relationship problems. So there's nobody there to have challenges with their children. And it's a misunderstanding. There's nobody here, but there is an apparent life happening. There is a body-mind organism that seems to be responsible for other, you know what I mean, for things. And it's not a graduation from life. It's not, you know, I just don't sit in my apartment in samadhi or bliss drooling on myself. You know, there's still things happening, albeit apparently happening, but they're still happening. So there's that. Yes, there's no one here, but there is a life being lived. And there are, sometimes there's decisions that seem to be made. Do I need to get help for this? So it's like, I'm just trying to address this because it comes up a lot. People will challenge you and say, well, I thought you said there's nobody there to have problems in it. No, well, problems still arise. You don't need a me to have a so-called problem. You don't need the separate self to have a challenge because it's a dream. And dream characters have challenges and they have apparent problems. And in the dream, in the story, they deal with them. They don't wake up from the dream. They don't leave the dream. The character in the storybook doesn't jump out of the book. You know, it's just seeing that there's a character in the story. Or if you're in a play and you're playing a character, you know you're playing a role, but you don't need to explain that to the audience. You know what I mean? So yeah, there's level confusion in that sense where life, it's like the thing about before there were mountains and then there were no mountains and then mountains became mountains again. You know, you see through the illusion of self, but then it's like the ordinary is extraordinary, but it's still the ordinary. It's still the, what we'd call the grind of the mundane of, you know, I take a 45 minute bus to work every day, you know, and it's extraordinary, but it's definitely ordinary. And there's still an apparent body mind that has to get on that bus and do the thing. So yeah, there's no escape hatch. There's no one gets out alive. Is this?
Yeah, there's a few thoughts you can put on that, you know. A thought never leaves its source. So, and yes, we cannot escape ourselves, right? So if we're thinking all the time, we cannot escape those thoughts. We can go wherever we want. We're still with them. They're still there. So yes, the level confusion, that's an important topic because of the idea that just because the world doesn't exist in truth, I could stop engaging with it, right? Or one could stop engaging with it. That's not possible. It's just like I can't escape the thoughts going on in my head, right? I can't run away from them. They'll pop up no matter where I am in the dream, in the world, or whatever we call a dream, and so on, right? It's still going to be there. And so, yes, be practical about things, right? That's all you can say, you know. Live life as a normal person. It doesn't make you a extraordinary person you don't have to act extraordinary in order to live a life, right? You need to act normal. It's not a license to become crazy just because you realize that it's arising from thoughts and not something that actually exists as you interpret it to be.
Yes, exactly. It's just because it's the way it already is. And, you know, sometimes people hear this message as there's nothing to do, which it's actually not saying there's nothing to do. It's just saying there's no one to do it. There's no doer. So it never calls into question the doing. And I've heard Ken Wapnick, not sure if you're familiar, but he always talks about just be normal, you know, and you don't want to get into what sounds like victim blaming and that kind of thing. Because again, that's level confusion. That's a misunderstanding that if I get cancer, that it's my fault. And if my thinking was a certain way, it wouldn't have happened. You know, I just see everything as one big, beautiful happening. And, you know, one of my favorite things from the course is actually there's no hierarchy in illusions. You know, it's all an illusion. So getting cancer on this level, of course, is not better than not getting cancer. You know what I mean? One is that it's all just an illusion. So, and that's an extreme example. But one process is not better than another process, because in the end, all processes are also an illusion. Time's an illusion. But, you know, you need time to see through time, you know, to see, it takes time. I forget that's something else from the course, but it's beautiful. There's so many things I could think of, but I see we're almost at the end there. Infinite patience bring about immediate results. I love that too, because that shows it's like, it's all relative. Yeah, if you have infinite patience, everything's in the immediacy. But yeah, so no hierarchy in illusions is a pretty profound statement, because it really all, it's all just this. And one illusion's not better or worse than another illusion. It's just an illusion. Well, I'll shut up. I see we're getting close to the time here.
Yes, it's time to wrap things up. So, yes, I love those thoughts too. And one, another one that sounds similar is the path without distance. Yes, I was alluding to what Ken Wapnick says about it, but also to anyone else, you know. You being spiritual doesn't mean giving up a life. You live a life, and the change of your mind about it is the great thing about it. So it's a shift, like you were speaking of at the beginning of this conversation. It's a shift, and it simply is a choosing to allow a different interpretation that is a happier interpretation to arise. So I would like to thank you very much for joining me here. And I thank all listeners and viewers. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast. Please If you like it, review the podcast, follow it, subscribe. And I'd love to see you join live too. Or if you want to be a guest on the podcast, please contact me. I'm very happy to talk about it and get things set up. It's all about all kinds of ways of sharing and spreading love and connection. As we were speaking of, we are all one, and this oneness needs to each other. And I like the quote also from A Course in Miracles, we're all walking each other home. So thank you for joining me in that. All the very best. And if you'd like to share verbally how one can reach out to you, please do, and then we'll put it in the show notes afterwards so that it's easy to access. So thank you once again. I think you forgot to unmute.
Are you still on? Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. I appreciate you inviting me on. Thanks for your time.
And for everyone's information, Walter has a podcast of his own, or a YouTube channel. I think it's my YouTube channel.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Walter Driscoll Non-Duality is my YouTube channel. And my email is walterdriscollnonduality@gmail.com.
Thank you for that. So anyone who wants to contact Walter, and I think you would also appreciate people if they want to contact you about being a guest on your podcast.
Yes, like that. Absolutely. Anybody that likes to talk about non-duality, it's called Chatting Non-Duality. So if you want to chat non-duality, I'd love to have you on.
Perfect. Okay, so thank you, everyone, and blessings to you all. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.